Chapter 18.
This is it,
said Grail, coming to a halt. They were halfway down a corridor that was largely indistinguishable from any other, though it had a shallow channel running down its center, with a trickle of water creeping along it. Similar gutters were not uncommon on the lower levels, and this was about as deep as Grail had ever ventured.
Is that the sacred waters?
Grail laughed at the idiotic question.
Drink it and find out.
Ryze ignored Grail's mockery and looked around him, his skepticism obvious.
Are you sure this is the right place?
Grail scowled.
Yes, I'm sure.
All right,
said Ryze under his breath.
Hold this.
Grail handed the apprentice his lantern. Then he turned to the wall, formed of thousands of precisely cut interlocking stones, and felt along its surface, ignoring the dust and grime that soon coated his palms and fingertips. After long minutes, he stepped back, brow furrowed.
Stay here.
He snatched his lantern and stalked back to the last junction, muttering. There he stopped, turned, and began pacing out his steps, counting as he went, though this time he consciously took shorter strides than normal. When he reached 144, a number considered potent in the arcane traditions of the Fellowship, he paused and turned to face the wall again. He was some 20 paces away from Ryze, and he impatiently ushered him over. This time he found what he had been searching for.
Shorter steps.
What?
The designer was short,
Grail explained, grinning. The warden pressed his cheek against the wall, looking along it with one eye closed. One of the stones protruded out farther than the others, almost imperceptibly. The imperfection was so minute that it would have been impossible to notice if he didn't know what he was looking for. Cautiously, he pressed the stone, and it retracted just a little. There was a mechanical click, followed by a steady ticking sound that quickly increased in tempo.
That doesn't sound good.
There's a second switch. If it is not activated within the allocated time, an alarm will ring within the Scintillant Tower, and these tunnels will soon be flooded with custodians.
Ryze began looking around frantically, his eyes wild.
They can't find us down here! Where's the other switch?
Calm yourself,
Grail said, even as the ticking reached a maddening staccato. Without hurrying, he took 7 measured steps back along the corridor and turned to face the opposite wall. He counted the stones until he came to the one he sought. It really was ingenious, he thought, as he studied the nondescript stone. If he didn't already know where it was, there would have been no way he would have found it. The ticking was now an almost constant whirr.
You don't know where it is, do you? We have to get out of here!
Grail gave him a look, then pressed the stone. It sank inward and the ticking ceased. With a dull grinding sound, a small panel in the wall cracked open down at ground level.
You need to learn to control your emotions.
You sound like Tyrus. How'd you know where the switches were?
Never underestimate the power of research, boy.
Now you really sound like Tyrus.
Ignoring him, Grail knelt and pushed on the panel, grunting with effort. It slid inward, then hinged up before it ground to a halt, halfway open. Positioning himself on the grimy floor, Grail reached in and shoved it upward. Ryze winced with each metallic squeal. Finally, it was opened fully, revealing a dark rectangular hole. It was barely large enough for a person to squeeze through. Ryze looked at it dubiously.
This is our way in?
This is your way in,
corrected Grail with a cruel smile.
You're not coming?
Do you think I'd fit in there?
The boy screwed up his face.
I'm not even sure I'll fit in there.
You will.
And you're sure the custodians don't know about this entrance?
It's a sluice, built to drain off excess water in times of flooding, but it hasn't been used in over a century.
Doesn't mean it's not guarded on the other side.
No, it doesn't. Which is another reason why you are going through and not me.
I don't know. What if there's a blockage in it or it's been bricked up?
There's only one way to find out. And going in there is the only way you get your precious book.
Rise stared at the hole in the wall. It wasn't large enough for a person to crawl through on hands and knees. The apprentice was going to have to worm his way forward on his belly. He cursed, then shrugged off the wide leather belt he wore diagonally across his chest and his hooded surcoat, leaving his torso bare. He checked the contents of the leather satchel strapped to his hip alongside his empty water skin and tucked a small blade down the side of his boot. He picked up his compact bullseye lantern and knelt down before the tiny dark passage.
One more thing.
From within his robes, he produced a rolled-up piece of soft leather.
You will need this.
Rise unrolled the leather to reveal the keystone.
How in the name of all that's holy did you get this?
It doesn't matter how I got it. What matters is what it does.
The apprentice shrugged and rolled it back in the leather before slipping it into his satchel.
The upper levels are the most heavily guarded. This way should bypass most of the custodians and wards, and bring you out right below the Hall of Conjunction. The entrance to the Well of Ages should be obvious. There will be two locks. The keystone will open one. You will have to open the other yourself.
Rise nodded.
Wait for me. Don't disappear.
I'll be here. But if you're caught, you're on your own.
So much for in this together.
Rise muttered as he lowered himself down to the hole. He ducked his head, swearing again. Both his shoulders scraped the sides as he slunk onto his belly and began to elbow his way into the darkness. With much grunting, scraping, and kicking, he made it deeper inside. It looked like he was being swallowed whole.
Be swift and be silent,
Grail whispered into the tunnel. Then he reached in and grabbed the sluice hatch.
No, don't close it!
Hissed Rise as the hatch began to groan, but Grail paid him no mind. With a final mechanical click, he sealed the way back, leaving Rise with no way to go but forward. Panic welled in Rise as he heard the sluice gate seal behind him, leaving him in absolute darkness. His breathing became shallow and quick, and he found himself wedged fast, unable to move forward or back. Not that there was any way to go back now. He tried to wriggle forward but achieved nothing. He was stuck, and he was going to die here, trapped in this claustrophobic tunnel pinned beneath a mountain of rock. He could see nothing and had no idea if the exit was 10 or 1,000 yards distant. He wanted to shout, to beg Grail to open the door and pull him out, but he knew it would do no good. The Thresher bastard wouldn't help him, and if he started shouting, there'd likely be a very sharp blade waiting for him. Tyrus's voice came to him then, a memory of a time when the Adept had talked him down from a potentially fatal magical overload.
I feel the sand beneath my hands.
Rise hissed, feeling a second wave of panic rising.
I feel the sand beneath my hands.
It had been during one of his early and nearly lethal attempts to use his magical ability. While Tyrus was sleeping, he had attempted to pull a small amount of magical energy into himself, enough to experiment with, but not enough to be truly dangerous. But that wellspring was quickly out of his control. He was flooded with raw magic, and it infused every fiber of his being. Burning from within and overloaded with power, he had risen off the ground, hot purple runes blazing within his flesh. He didn't have the knowledge of the runic forms to disperse that much power or to channel it outward, and he would have been utterly consumed by it, left as a burnt-out husk, had not Tyrus woken and come to his aid. His master's voice had cut through the agony like a soothing balm.
You're sitting cross-legged on sand. It's warm beneath you. Comforting, soft. You feel the grains of sand beneath your hands. The sun is falling, giving way to dusk, but you can still feel its touch on your skin. You can hear birds calling on the wind and smell the subtle aroma of desert blooms. What else can you feel? What else can you smell and hear and see?
I feel the grains of sand beneath my hands. I smell bitterroot tea brewing in a pot over a fire. I hear the crackle of burning twigs. I see the embers lifting into the sky, shifting from orange to purple to dark blue, like swirls of oil on water. I see the first stars. I feel the grains of sand beneath my hands.
And just as that simple thought exercise had once drawn him back from the brink of destruction, so it worked now. His breathing slowed, his heartbeat steadied. He was calm. He began to wriggle forward. The sluice tunnel was long and never broadened, but it was mercifully free of blockage or debris. He saw light up ahead and slowed his approach, moving as silently as possible. He squirmed on, but in horror, he saw that the exit was barred.
No, 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 no.
He scrambled forward faster, not caring if anybody heard him. He reached the end of the tunnel and wrapped his hands around the stone grating blocking his exit. Peering out, he saw an expansive, circular room, its floor crisscrossed with arcane geometry. The marble panels lining the walls were replete with carved symbolism, and there was a large, spiraling staircase that descended into the center of the chamber, with cold, unnatural light spilling down from the level above. There was one other exit from the room, a giant archway sealed by golden doors covered in yet more symbols and iconography. Rise was about to smash the stone grating loose when one of those gilt doors cracked open. He heard hushed voices, and a pair of robed masters emerged, flanked by white-armored custodians. All four wore hoods covering their features, and strained though he did, Rise could not hear the words they said. The door clicked shut behind them. There was a mechanical whir of cogs and levers, and runic wards around the lintel pulsed with blue light. Still speaking in low tones, the masters and their guards climbed the spiraling stairs and were soon beyond Rise's sight. A few moments later, the entire stone staircase began to retract, folding in on itself and twisting as it rose. The stairs fit perfectly into the geometric blocks of the ceiling, slotting neatly into place like a fanned-out deck of cards being brought back together. It was completely dark and silent. Rise gave it a few minutes, then inspected the stone grating by touch. It was one solid piece. He worked his fingers around it, probing at the flaking mortar. With considerable difficulty, he managed to retrieve the blade from his left boot and began to carve around the edge of the grate. It was slow, awkward work, and he got more than a bit of mortar in his eyes and mouth. Once he'd finished, he took hold of the grate in one hand and positioned himself to strike at a corner with the meat of his palm. The tight confines made it difficult to put his full weight into it, but he struck as hard as he could and felt the grate budge. Encouraged, he struck it again, and again, and finally it came loose. He lowered it carefully to the floor and hauled himself out, stretching his back and rolling his neck. Then he lit his lantern with a single strike of his flint, keeping it shuttered so that its light was just a narrow beam. He set the grate back in place and padded across the room toward the giant archway. The doors had no obvious handles or keyholes. Try as he might, he could not even find the crack between them, so masterful and precise was their construction. Geometric patterns covered every inch, the intersecting lines and shapes leading his gaze inward to a symbol of a staring eye surrounded by flame. Rise felt a tingling in the back of his head as he looked upon it, a sensation not unlike the feeling he had experienced with the keystone in hand. He felt drawn to the symbol, like it was pulling him inexorably toward it. He placed his palm upon the blazing eye. A sudden jolt pulsed through him, making his breath catch in his throat, and he quickly pulled his hand back. There were a series of mechanical clicks, and an instant later, two triangular holes appeared in the golden doors, one to each side of the eye. They were the same size as the stone the warden had given him. He could see carved lines on their inner surfaces. The magnetic feeling was stronger, now drawing him toward the triangular keyholes. Rise swiftly retrieved the stone from his satchel and held it before the keyholes. It was tugged toward the left one, like a lodestone to iron.
Okay, okay.
He breathed and thrust the stone into it. It fit perfectly, and there was a pulse of blue energy that lit up the key as it locked into place. The door remained sealed, of course. Grail had said he needed both keys. Again, he felt the strange pulling sensation, and his right hand moved toward that second keyhole, almost of its own accord. As he neared it, purple runes flared within his flesh, rippling along his hand and forearm. He pulled back in shock, and the runes faded. Cautiously, he moved his hand back toward the hole, and again the runes burst to life within his flesh. This time he did not pull away. Closing his eyes, he began to move his hand around in the air above the keyhole, feeling the patterns of the runic lock. He quickly realized it was far more complex than anything he had seen before, almost overwhelmingly so. It was like a dozen locks in one, each one overlapping the other. With a growl of frustration, and not a small amount of awe, Rise pulled away from the lock once more. There was no way he could bypass this, at least not in any way he'd done before. He bit his lip, weighing his options. Again, he felt the keyhole pulling at him.
What's the worst that could happen?
He muttered and thrust his hand completely into the keyhole. Nothing happened at first, and Rise shook his head.
What did I expect?
Then something locked tightly around his wrist, and a force pulled his arm deeper into the hole. Agonizing pain seared him, and he was slammed against the door. He would have screamed had the air not been driven from his lungs. The pain was excruciating. It felt like his whole arm had been thrust into a brazier of glowing coals. He wilted, falling to one knee, but could not escape, for the door held him trapped. Purple runes flashed brightly up his shoulder, and the power within him roiled like an angry beast straining to be freed. Violet bled across everything he saw, and magical vapor seeped from his eyes, nose, and mouth. He'd felt this sensation only once before.
I feel the grains of sand beneath my hands. I feel the grains of sand beneath my hands.
He clenched his eyes shut, trying to calm the rising thunder of magic, lest it rip him apart. His arm was still awash with agony. Sweat dripped down his body.
I feel the grains of sand beneath my hands.
The pain lessened, just enough for him to gasp a breath, and the roar of magic within him quieted fractionally. He could feel the pattern within the keyhole, a pattern that wanted a match. The sensation was similar to what he had felt with other runic locks, but far, far more intense. With his eyes still clenched shut, he pictured the pattern of the interlocking knot of runes. They shifted and turned as he concentrated on them, slipped away from him, elusive and silken, but he pursued them. In a rush, the runic arrangement came into stark clarity and it pulsed with a blue light. It was much the same as picking a lock. Find the pins that need to be triggered, squeeze them down, and move to the next. With his free hand, he formed the first of the runes in the air, then unraveled it and moved to the next. He did this with each one in turn until they were all unlocked. With a final pulse of ethereal light, his arm was released. He pulled it free, expecting to see his flesh charred to the bone, but it was completely unharmed. Runes were glowing beneath his skin, the same symbols he had visualized. They began to fade almost instantly, and he flexed his hand, still marveling that it was unscathed. The pain was gone as well, leaving nothing but its echo in the stiffness of his fingers. There were a series of mechanical whirs and clicks, and the doors swung open. White mist hung in the air within. Retrieving the keystone, Rise walked cautiously into the chamber.
The Well of Ages.
It was more like a massive, opulent bathhouse than a well. The room stretched farther than Ryze's lantern could reach, and much of it was obscured by the thick mist. But what he saw was all white marble, gold, and arcane symbolism. Exquisitely carved columns rose into the fog, and steps all around the edge of the room gently dropped down into the pool. The water was perfectly clear and still, and only the lantern's reflection on its glass-like surface gave any indication of its presence. Ryze walked to the edge of the pool, scarce daring to breathe. Kneeling on the step closest to the waters, he felt the white mist coiling around him like ethereal tendrils. Knowing that he could be interrupted at any moment, he unhooked his empty water skin from his side, pulled out the stopper, then paused. It felt like a violation, taking the water from this sacred pool. But what were his alternatives? Return to the violent and dangerous warden empty-handed? Hand himself over to the custodians? Steeling himself, Ryze lowered the water skin below the surface, sending ripples across the pool. The water was cool and felt perfectly mundane. He wondered if the stories of its life-giving magic were exaggerated. But if that were so, why hide it away from the world? Water skin filled, Ryze lifted it from the pool. He held it up before him, watching the water drip down the leather.
Why not?
He said with a smile and raised it to his lips. He drank his fill, then wiped his mouth with the back of his hand. It was the purest tasting water he had ever drunk, though if it had any properties beyond that, they were not immediately apparent. He refilled the water skin and stoppered it, then secured it back on his hip. Only then, as he stood to leave, did he notice the gentle illumination rising from the center of the pool. Ryze's brow furrowed. How had he not seen that before? He walked around the edge trying to get a better look at that strange light, but it was just a little too distant and just a little too submerged to see clearly. But he felt the presence of the light source. It infused the waters and the mist itself. It infused the very air he breathed. He peered down through the waters again, which were just now settling from the ripples he had caused. As the pool returned to stillness, his eyes locked onto something down there, something blindingly bright, and his heart lurched. He felt it in his bones. It buzzed in the back of his mind. It whispered to his soul. This was something powerful and old, something that had been old long before the rise of humanity. It was a rune, the notion coming to rise from nowhere, but he knew with utter certainty that it was true. It was a rune given physical form, one of the primordial forces that had wrought order from chaos. And in that moment of wonder, Ryze felt the prickling sensation of someone watching him. He turned. A shadowy figure stood on the edge of the pool, unmoving only a few yards away. At first, Ryze thought its features were hidden within a dark cowl covering its face. Then he realized it had no features. Its face was blank, as shadowy as the rest of it, and yet he had no doubt that it saw him. He could feel its gaze crawling upon his skin, and in rising horror, he also realized he could see through it. This was not some being of flesh and blood. This was a specter, a revenant, an echo of the past. It pointed at him, the movement displaced the mist, an eerie greenish-blue light flickered around its arm. It took a step toward him, and more of its shape was outlined in that horrible, baleful light. Ryze let out a cry of terror, then he turned and fled. As he ran, he realized there were more murky figures standing around the periphery of the room. All were robed in shadows, their forms delineated by where the mist wasn't, and all had turned toward him, staring blankly. He raced from the room, heart thundering, not bothering to close the great golden doors as he sprinted directly for the sluice tunnel. He glanced back and saw the shadowy specter pass through the doorway. Its featureless face, glowing from within with flickering teal-colored balefire, snapped around to lock onto him. Swearing, Rise dropped his lantern. With a yell, he hurled the stone grate aside, then threw himself into the tunnel, uncaring of the scrapes and bruises he suffered in his haste. Breathing hard, he elbowed his way through, squirming and wriggling frantically. He glanced over his shoulder once. In the light of his abandoned lantern, he could see the empty room behind him, but nothing more. Then a shadowy, faceless figure bent and looked down the tunnel toward him. Rise whipped his gaze forward, crawling as fast as he was able. It felt like it took an age, and he was certain he was going to feel the icy touch of a spectral hand around his ankle, but finally his head struck the sluice hatch. He hammered his fist against it.
Open it! Open it now!
The hatch ground open, and Rise scrambled out. Grail was there, grinning at him eagerly like a cat with its prey.
You found it. You got it?
Rise ignored the warden's questions.
Seal it, quickly!
When Grail just blinked at him, Rise swore and dropped to his bloodied knees to wrench the sluice gate shut.
Answer me, boy.
The warden grabbed hold of Rise and yanked him to his feet.
Did you find the Well of Ages?
By way of answer, Rise unclipped his water skin and held it out before him in one shaking hand.
Take it. I'm done.